Because most of us put everything in that bucket thinking that we can predict and control everything. And you know, as human beings, that's what we want to do. And yes. It's not possible. Well, the first thing is to acknowledge what you're carrying. That's not necessarily therapy. That's self-reflection. But for most of these parenting styles that I've seen, my four F's can be applied and work fine.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. So glad you're listening to Health Power. And I'm very excited about today's topic because a lot of us are angry. And I have to say, I think there's a lot of stuff to be concerned, angry. I would say I'm more scared about where things are going right in this country. And that wonderful voice was Dr. Adolph Doc Brown. He is a renowned mental health expert. And he says, quote, whatever is on your plate gets served to those you love and interact with. The past is a place for reference, not residents don't dwell. He is a clinical psychologist. You may have seen him on ABC's The Parent Test. He is a co-host along with Ali Wentworth. And if I read his whole bio, we'd be here all day. So we're going to put it in the show notes. Doc Brown, welcome to Health Power.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's so nice to have you on. First of all, when did you know that you wanted to be a clinical psychologist?
I knew at a very young age. In fact, had a normal childhood.
And that's lucky.
Up until 2 years old. So my parents were married, middle class, and five children. And I came along, and it was around the time my dad woke up and said he didn't want that anymore. And he left the state, went to live with his parents. And my mom couldn't afford to maintain the same lifestyle. So we moved to the inner city projects. And I was fortunate to have grandparents who lived nearby. They were farmers. So I spent my childhood inner city and on a farm. And I'm very fortunate to have had both. But I say that to say my oldest sibling and only brother Oscar became my hero. He was murdered when I was 11. So I have all this stuff going on. And, you know, I have a principal, I have teachers, I have a village that really cares about me. And they told my mom I should talk to someone.
Right.
And they took me to a psychologist. And I thought the person was just a ripoff because I would go in and do all the talking and they would just write. But every session that I'd leave, I felt better.
Right.
So I really didn't know exactly what was happening, but I felt better. And as I grew up, I realized that I want to be that guy. I want to be that person that helps someone that comes in with the weight of the world and leaves as light as a feather.
Wow. That's huge. You know, when I read the quote, the past is a place for reference, not residence, don't dwell. It can be really hard not to dwell. I would love with that. And just what are some tips? And I think for some people, it might be dwelling. And for other people, especially if they have severe abuse and trauma and real PTSD, it's a different situation. So I'm assuming it depends on the level. I know I just threw a bunch.
No, it definitely depends on the level. However, what I'm about to explain applies to all.
Okay.
So imagine that we've been traumatized. We've been abused. Maybe we've been exposed to such toxic environment that it would qualify as post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
What happens to most, as opposed to stopping to heal and recover, think about it this way. A poisonous snake bites me.
Right.
Okay. And as opposed to healing and stopping and attempting to recover,
right,
I want to go search this snake out to tell this snake that I didn't deserve to be bitten, that I want to find out why this snake did it. I want to find out about this snake's personality and what made him bite me as opposed to other people. I think that is the normal progression for most when it comes to trauma.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, the poison is in us. So we're searching the snake out with the poison circulating through our bodies. And depending on how long you search, it could be years.
Right.
My suggestion is the past is a place of reference, not residence. Mm-hmm. So let the snake be.
I see.
Take care of yourself.
Right.
And guess what? And you've heard the saying, a snake, once a snake, always a snake. Mm-hmm. Possibly. It's possible that the snake may have changed. However, the true change has to occur with you. So stop, take care of yourself and recover before doing anything else.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd love to get your opinion on forgiveness too, because some people say, oh, you can't move on unless you forgive. If you forgive them, it's more about peace for yourself. What do you feel?
Well, it is. It is peace for yourself. And when you say forgiveness, I think oftentimes people forget the big part of it, self-forgiveness. That's the big part of it. Everyone thinks it has to do with that snake that's going about its business, maybe even biting other people.
Right.
The self-forgiveness. And I say that because sometimes people will think that what did I do to deserve that? What right. did I do to cause that? You know, I'm a bad person. And oftentimes that becomes the impetus for the self-forgiveness.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, I mentioned earlier that I'm more scared than angry. And there's so much hate. It's so depressing.
Definitely. Lisa, we're sitting here talking about how we feel about what's going on in our society. We don't like it. However, we're not picking up arms to hurt people. You know, we're not throwing drinks in people's faces in restaurants. So it's deeper than the political climate. It's the interpersonal level of what people are carrying. So just imagine that we all have a second invisible backpack. Call it the emotional backpack. We all have stuff in it. You know, everybody. It's just a part of being human. I may have this much. You may have, you know, this much. So, you know, we're dealing on a daily basis. However, like you said, you quoted me, but my favorite quote is this. If we don't heal from whatever's in our backpack, we bleed on people who didn't cut us.
Oh, that's a good
one.
And that's
what's happening in our society.
Yes, so true.
Think about this. We all had these backpacks for a long time. Mm-hmm. Then the pandemic came along.
Oh, gosh.
To date, the pandemic is the only thing that happened to everyone at the same time all over the world.
Wow.
So that goes into people's backpack along with all the other personal, the childhood traumas, the relationship, the illnesses and everything else. It happens to everyone. No one is spared. And depending on what you were carrying already, it came out. And it's still coming out. It's still coming out. So it's so much deeper than the political climate. I mean, if we were talking about the political climate, we also have to talk about the people that feel, that they're not noticed, that they're being discriminated against, that there's not justice for all. So that's at that societal level.
Right.
But then society is made up of individuals. So these individuals are bringing their own thing to the playing field. And that makes it even more, can be more devastating.
Right. So what do we do? How do we figure out our backpack? I mean, I'm thinking therapy, but.
No. Well, the first thing is to acknowledge what you're carrying.
Okay.
That's not necessarily therapy. That's self-reflection.
That's true.
Taking time in this busy, distracted world to take an inventory of what you're carrying. And when it does get to therapy, I can tell you that those that I've talked to in therapy that have these backpacks, they're so relieved when they take an inventory because oftentimes they find out they're carrying stuff that doesn't even belong to them.
Oh my gosh, that's my problem. I'm always worried about other people in my life and their issues and how they're not helping themselves and why they aren't getting help for their mental illness and why they're not, you know, my backpack is way too full of my worries. So this is good.
But if we took time to recognize that everyone we meet is carrying something we know nothing about, instead of judging, you know, the question that we would ask ourselves is, I wonder what they're carrying that I know nothing about. Mm. So that helps us not take things personally, but taking them seriously.
Yes.
Once you take something personally, you add their stuff to your backpack.
Yeah. And my backpack's heavy enough.
Exactly. All of us are carrying tremendous weight.
Plus there's, you know, the daily stressors of life, right? Relationships, finances, lack of support.
Definitely.
So once we can take that inventory and say, okay, because I've been doing that lately, really being like, okay, what do I need to work on for myself? I can't make people fix themselves. I can help. I can offer some advice or encouragement. What do I need? Okay, I need to work on that. I need to work on this. And then is it from that point where you decide if you need more help than you have within yourself? And I think that's fine. Like if you need a therapist or a support group, that's totally fine. But what do you think?
Well, I think that we should start just what you just said, Lisa, with regards to, imagine two buckets.
Okay.
The bucket of everything that you can control.
Right.
And a bucket of things that you can't. Yeah. Start there. Because most of us put everything in that bucket thinking that we can predict and control everything.
Right.
And you know, as human beings, that's what we want to do. And yes. it's not possible. And it drives us to depression, anxiety, and all sorts of other things. So mm-hmm. making sure that you understand the two buckets. And sometimes you have to kind of move things around, like, hold it. I'm trying to control this other person. Heck, I can't even control myself. Let me move that back up. So that's the start. And if it gets to a point where you don't necessarily feel like you have the wherewithal to do that, certainly a mental health professional can help you sort it out.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. You know, I know some of your other advice, which is great, is exercise,
yes,
meditation, and reflection, getting off your phones, spending time with family and friends. If you want to unpack these, speaking of backpack a little bit.
That's right. And you know, we live, I would call it like choice distress.
Yeah.
Today. You know, we're just overwhelmed with choices. We distraction fatigue. Take time for you.
Okay.
Take time for you. And if that means reflection, if that means meditation, if that means exercise, take time for you. And it's really, really tough. We've been isolated for a while.
Yeah.
And everyone assumes that that affects everyone the same. It doesn't. There are people who are extroverts. There are people who are introverts. And since then, there's a person called the ambivert. So there are people who don't necessarily get their energy from other people. I'm one. Right. I get my energy with solitude and reading. And
that's my husband. Total extrovert. He was like, this being on lockdown, I'm loving this. I'm
inside. It's right. So not everybody had the same experiences.
Right.
But to take time to yourself, it just helps you notice what it is that you're carrying.
Right.
One of the things I learned early on as a young psychologist was that we're only as sick as our secrets. So when you say we're only as sick as our secrets, it doesn't mean you go out and you blab about everything that you're carrying in your backpack. What it means is you have to know what you're carrying.
Right.
You have to know, because then you'll know kind of what, you know, what your experience is with you, but also what you're likely to do with others.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Now, exercise is huge for so many health reasons we know, but one of them is for mental health as well. So what do you like to do?
Exercise is huge for me. I'm a boxer.
Oh, sweet. And I love your background.
So I'm I've boxed. My principal, elementary school principal, suggested that for me. I was enraged with my brother's murder. I wanted revenge, and I thought about it day and night. And so I box. I do martial arts. We have a gym in our home. And one of the things you talk about parenting,
right.
how you never know what sticks. We're parents of 8 children, all young adults, 21 to 35, 3 grandkids. All of our children are committed to their fitness.
Wow.
And they grew up in our household with it. You know, kids would come over and work out. We owned a gym for a few years.
Oh, nice.
But our kids are committed to that. And I tell people that the hormones that the brain releases from exercise,
yeah,
is the best legal performance enhancing hormone there is.
Yep. Yes, that is absolutely true. Okay, I'm looking at you and I'm thinking, what? Because you look so young. Of all these grandkids and kids. Okay. All right. Getting off your phone is tough. I've been doing that more lately because we have a tendency. It seems like if you have a second of free time, you've got to start scrolling, but you don't. That's the time to practice mindfulness, right?
Oh, yes. Everyone thinks that being bored is a problem. Listen, right. The brain was never, ever designed to receive as much stimulation as it has right now. We're entering an era whereby the diagnoses for children with autism and other things isn't necessarily coming from a genetic component. You know, right. we're seeing more and more studies of environmental issues with children with devices, with children yeah. not having facial contact and not knowing how to mimic facial cues because their face is in the device. And when we talk about addiction, we're so quick to talk about so many other things as opposed right. to technology addiction.
Yes.
What about technology? How often can people, I remember when my wife and I first decided not to bring our phones into the bedroom. I remember how tough that was. And we were we're the furthest from phone addiction. However, just picking it up,
yeah,
you don't realize how often you do it. Unless, of course, you have some phones you can set to how much time you've actually spent on it. And I think know. If people did that, they would be really, really surprised.
I should do that. I don't do it on purpose because I don't want to know. But I have gotten better because it's such a distraction. And I feel like it's shortened everyone's attention spans.
Definitely. Definitely. You go into restaurants and you look around and you see people on a date, you know, and I'm not judging, you know, sure. maybe they're playing footsie under the table. That's their connection. But the point is that face to face, looking someone in the eyes, mm-hmm. I'm unsure if we'll get that back anytime soon.
Yeah, and that scares me as well, because I think social interactions are so important and loneliness is on the rise.
Yes.
And people think, oh, but I can just message or watch this video, but it's not the same.
It's not even close to being the same. And again, we're seeing that from children, the socialization of children coming right. from YouTube, coming mm. from TikTok. And so we're seeing how, and we knew a little bit when television was quote unquote used as babysitter or yes. the babysitter way back, but we're really seeing it now because it's kind of just there are researchers that say that taking a child's cell phone would be like tying one hand behind their back these days.
Oh my gosh. I don't even think children should have cell phones. We waited until my daughter was 13. Now, okay, that's still a child, but. I'm talking like anybody 13 and under.
I agree. I agree. I think they shouldn't get cell phones until high school. And again, yeah. you know, I have a practice. However, I travel the world giving master classes. Mm-hmm. I travel the world doing focus groups where I want to know things that are going on that I may not be aware of. So, right. you know, I just left Denver, Colorado with a bunch of science teachers talking to them about what they're seeing so that yeah. I can, you know, develop and facilitate my classes better to meet their needs. So I see this stuff. I say high school for cell phones.
Yeah,
and it can be tough because the other children may have them.
And that's where parenting comes in. And speaking of that, talk to us a little bit about the parent test.
Oh, one of the most value-added things I've ever been involved in.
Oh, yeah, it's really good.
Parent test had 12 families who said that their style, their parenting style was the best, hands down. And we gave them tests to see exactly, you know, how well their style would do if their child were to grow up and just become an autonomous, independent, functioning adult
right.
in the real world. So of those 12 parenting styles, we gave wonderful tests. Caused some controversy, but were needed. Some of my favorite were Stranger Danger and the Home Alone, where the parents said, my child would never do this. We had someone come to the door. Parents sat in the viewing van, and they told their child not to let anyone in the home. And the person came to the door, addressed the actor or actress as dressed as an electrician or a plumber, and said, hey, your parents said I could come in and fix the bathroom. Some of the kids were like, sure, come on in.
Right. I saw the ones with the dogs. It's so hard,
the
you know.
Dog.
The puppies.
Yes. And the puppies are around the building.
Yeah, I love puppies. Uh-huh.
So the big thing that came from that, it just shows us our blind spots.
Right.
A father of eight, guess what? Every single child is different. There's not one thing. There's not one style that worked with all of them, and all of them are different. Every child, every person is a study of one. So they're constant blind spots. So what I tried to give them were things that will apply regardless of their parenting style, that every child needs consistency, structure, limits, and boundaries. And we, as parents, we have to stop saying, I told you that already. No, repetition is how we learn.
Right.
So when you tell your child never to open door for strangers, tell them 20 times. And then when you remember it, tell them 20 more and keep doing it.
Yeah, I agree. One thing that I think that I see lacking with some parents is the ability to say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I think that's really important. Like if I screwed up, I'm going to tell my kid, listen, I shouldn't have said that. That was the wrong thing to say. And I'm sorry.
That's huge. Right? That's huge. And even though we didn't get an opportunity to fully address that publicly on the show, I spent a lot of time behind the scenes with that because what you're talking about is what we call ghosts in the nursery. When parents have had crises and trauma of their own in their childhood, and then they bring it to bear.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
And so we saw a bunch of that. And so, you know, when parents felt like as children, they had to be perfect. And so they walked on eggshells. So now they're as parents, they're pretending that they're perfect and they're kind of doing the same thing and they're recapitulating their trauma. So what I would tell them is you've done that. That happened. I want you to focus on that. I want to focus on how you want to be better from that.
Yes.
And bring the best to your child.
Right. I feel like sometimes they feel like, well, that's what I dealt with and that's what you're going to deal with. But that's not healthy. Why are you throwing your crap on them? There was a woman who used to live next door to. We moved. She used to yell at her kids so loud we could hear in our house. It would make my daughter cry, make me tear me up. I went said to her, I said, listen, we can hear you inside our house yelling. And we're talking young, little kids. You know, I think it's wrong at any age. So loud. And she said, well, I'm a yella. I come from a long family of yellas, and that's just what we do. That's her voice. And I thought, that is really sad. Wouldn't you rather say my parents yelled at me all the time and I hated it, so I want to do better?
Yes. And you know, and what we don't realize is we think that because a parent yells at a child, the child grows up to hate the parent. They don't. They grew up to hate themselves.
Exactly. Yes, I do. I wonder, or I think, do they turn into bullies?
Oftentimes they do.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
And I think there's something worse than bullying is when they turn it inward.
Yes. Yes.
Become cutters and do other self-humiliating as well as, just really do things that hurt themselves and hurt. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it will hurt others. That's the bullying aspect. But I see the withdrawn, the depression, the isolation. Right. I see a bunch of that.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, that I noticed with parents. Let's say you're at the store and the kid's crying, I want this toy. And they're just like, just be quiet. You're not getting it. I say stuff like, I hear that you want that. You're not going to get it, but it's okay to have your feelings. You can feel however you want. You're still not going to get it. And I feel like that's a lot different than just shutting them down and telling them to shut up. I don't like that.
Well, it sounds like you're an intentional present and purposeful parent.
I'm not
purposeful. Purposeful.
Yes. My dad was, we're close now, but he was a bit of a narcissist. My mom was chronically ill, so she couldn't really take care of us. We had to take care of her. And I said, I am going to do everything I can to give my daughter the best of me, the best for her. And like I said, if I mess up, I apologize. But it makes me sad when I see kids just getting their feelings shut down. Like, why not let them feel it? I mean, what's the big whoop?
You know, what's interesting is that the biggest push in education today is helping children with emotional regulation.
Yes.
Go figure. That starts at home. It starts at home. But now it's becoming a part of the curriculum in schools.
Because
parents oftentimes shut them down.
Right.
So no. Anger is a natural human emotion, a natural feeling, a natural response to things. So allow your child to experience it. And if you feel like your child is getting a little out of hand, then you got to just explain that's your anger and you don't cause other people harm.
Right.
So you don't shut it down.
Yes.
But a lot of parents are afraid of their own anger.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So when we haven't dealt with our stuff,
Right.
It doesn't just stay in the backpack waiting one day for you to, you know, process it. You can't bury feelings alive. They won't die. They fight harder to get out, and they come out when you least expect it. And that's what's happening all over the world right now.
Yeah, that's true. You know, going back to the parent test, were there any particular parenting styles that you recommend or that you thought stood out in terms of having the kid, letting the kid have their emotions, giving them, helping with emotional regulation, having, you know, closer connections with their families?
Definitely. So like I said, there are 12 different styles.
Oh, okay.
And I gave them things that would apply to all of the styles. So one of the things that I write about in my research are the four F's. First of all, fun. It's okay to have fun with your kids, with your family. Great. Fun is an actual authentic part of learning. And we forget that. Einstein said it much better than I could. He said that creativity is intelligence having fun.
Oh, I like that.
So we forget that. So be fun. And fun doesn't have to cost money. You know, I tell parents, if you haven't laughed in a long time, a smile is your training wheels for laughter. So you're not smiling. So look in your backpack and see kind of, you know, what's preventing that.
Mm-hmm.
I also say it's okay to be fair. Recognizing that your child is not you. That's a huge problem with a lot of parents. Right. We think of our children as mini, mini me's.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not. Every person is a study of one. They're different. They're different. And we don't like, you know, build them up and shape them. What we do is we guard and we guide.
Okay.
At the end of the day, children and young adults and teenagers, they have choices.
Right.
So I say be fair. And also be fair to yourself and not tether yourself to the choices your children make. And what I mean when I say that, if your child is a straight A student, you're like, oh my gosh, I did that, you know? and then your child goes out and punches someone in the mouth for nothing, then so you're owning that too.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, and it gets worse. I mean, it can. So if the child's older and the child's an honor roll student, but then gets a DUI.
Mm.
So, if you tether yourself to those choices, then just like the honor roll, you didn't do it. The child, you know, their work ethic and other things.
Okay.
The DUI, you didn't do it.
Right.
You know, the child did it. And you know, like, oh, what if the parents drank? And what if they modeled it? The child still had choices.
Yes.
But so I don't, the power of choice is big with me.
Oh, okay.
So be fair. So fun, right. Fair. Here's one that we also dropped the ball with is being firm. Being firm. And firm, all it means is consistency, structure, limits, and boundaries.
Yes.
And I say that my mother told me basically, Burger King may have great burgers, but you can't have it your way all the time. So admit the same thing.
Right.
Admit the same thing. And lastly, I talk about being flexible as a parent.
Yes.
Being flexible. Your child is growing. Guess who else is growing or should be growing? You should be. I should be. It's a part of life.
Yes.
You know, I live about 7 blocks from the projects I grew up in. So I meet people all the time and see people that I grew up with. And when I first came back home, people would say, you've changed. And I'm like, yeah, we're supposed to.
Yes. Isn't that funny when you see people and they think you got to stay the same as when you were 16 or something?
No, of course not. Oh, no. We're supposed to. So the child is changing. You're changing. We're changing. Be fair. So those four F's, regardless of what parenting style, especially one, I guess excluding one that's abusive.
Of course.
Exactly. But for most of those parenting styles that I've seen, my four F's can be applied and work fine.
Okay. Yeah. One of the concerns I have too is that I know some people like this where they want their kids to be exactly like them. I love math. Don't say you don't love math. I love math. And they want them to be little thems. It's like, that's so unhealthy.
No,
and
they cannot.
You're going to be in much bigger hot water down the road.
They're going to rebel pretty much anyway. And then you're going to do that. They're not miniature versions of us.
Yes.
You know, I did a show recently. And the topic was, would you marry yourself? And everyone, I was the guest expert, but everyone was saying, yeah, I would, and I would. And then it was my turn. And I said, no way. And they were like, what? And then I explained to them, like, the things about myself that I love the balance that my wife gives me. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the fact that he believes in vacations. I married myself. I love what I do professionally.
You work all the time.
Oh, I love it. It's rewarding. So there's a balance that comes with us. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And I think if parents took a really good inventory of themselves, I think in all actuality, they wouldn't want their children to necessarily be them, but more or less stand on their shoulders.
Yes. That is so. So it sounds like you travel a lot and you give a lot of
chances. Oh, yeah. I did quite a bit.
And what did you learn from those teachers in Denver, Colorado? What were some of the things they said they were seeing in their class? I'm curious.
Oh, wow. They were seeing many things. I guess, and these were science teachers. This was the National Association of Teaching of Science.
Okay.
And there were over 7,000 educators there.
Wow.
From all walks of life. And the biggest thing they were seeing, that there's a disconnect. They felt like there's a bigger disconnect than was in previous years. And of course, I explained the pandemic, I explained technology, but more importantly, I explained how do we connect with children?
Right.
How do we do that better? And one of the ways, empathy.
Yes.
Empathy. And empathy, not in terms of putting on someone else's shoes. That's not, okay. You know, that I don't know where that came from. Empathy is so much deeper than that. True empathy. If I'm telling you something, then empathy starts by you believing it.
Right.
Then looking inside yourself, that self-reflection piece, finding similar experiences or emotions that I'm communicating to you. And then when you find those within yourself, you're better able to connect with me.
Oh, okay. I see.
So if you're wondering sometimes why our world appears to have more apathy than empathy.
Yeah.
Empathy is a process. It's not just putting on someone else's shoes. If it were that easy, we'd have a loving, trusting society. Because empathy takes steps, just like thinking. You know, the brain wasn't designed to help us to think. The brain was actually designed to help us not to have to think.
Mm.
So the brain plays go fish. It matches on our experiences and exposure, pretty much. So if you've never met anyone like me and I never met anyone like you, our brain goes boop and it puts it in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go off of that, we're likely to be wrong because the brain didn't do it for correctness sake. It did it for efficiency's sake.
Oh, I see.
You see, the brain wants to keep us alive and wants to look for threats. True thinking is really rare. You know, the brain is kind of like a black, white, good, bad. The true thinking occurs in the gray. And there are a lot of people who prefer not to be bothered by the gray.
That's funny. Are you still seeing patients in your practice?
In a different capacity.
Teens or children or adults or who do you see?
No, I see everyone. I'm a child and family psychotherapist.
Okay.
I'm trained as an analyst, a psychoanalytic psychotherapist.
Nice.
However, my travel started taking off a few years back. And when my travel started taking off, I still see clients now in a coaching capacity.
Oh, okay.
Right. And coaching and therapy are similar, but different. I guess the best way to describe therapy and the type of therapy that I do, I'm pulling things out of your backpack. I'm pulling. Coaching, I'm pushing. It's much easier to push.
Yes, I may have to.
Right. So coaching, right. So coaching is like encouraging, supporting. Therapy is oftentimes, it's at that interpersonal level of digging.
Right. Wow. Are you taking on new clients?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, was there anything we didn't touch on? And I'd love for you to come back. It's been such a big conversation.
I would love to as well. Psychology is everything.
Yes, isn't it? I love psychology. Is there anything today, though, Doc, that we didn't touch on that you'd love to talk about? And then again, my door is always open. I'd love to do whatever, anything regular, whatever. I know you're busy, but this is going to be great.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been looking forward to this. I know your background and I'm thoroughly impressed.
Oh, that really means a lot to me. Thank you so much. So, but yeah, we covered a lot of good stuff. But is there anything we left out that you wanted to wrap this up with?
No, I think that if people just kind of would slow down, take our faces out of our phones and take a inventory of what we're carrying, what we've been through, what we're going through, I think our relationships and interactions with others would be healthier.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Everybody take Doc Brown's advice. And how do we find you? We can watch you on the parent test and tell us all the ways online. So,
yes, you can find me at my website. It's Doc Speaks, like the doctor speaks, docspeaks.com. And I also do a podcast. It's called In the Balcony with Dr. Adolph Brown. And they call it In the Balcony. Sigmund Freud, famous German psychoanalyst, talked years ago about the unconscious and subconscious.
Right.
Balcony people versus basement people.
Oh, okay.
Balcony people are people who aren't perfect by any means, but by emptying their backpacks, they're able to ascend to the balcony. And once there, they cheer for others.
Yeah.
They applaud others, but they also help others up. Basement people, on the other hand, aren't bad people by any means.
Uh-huh.
They're carrying the weight of the world. And oftentimes they don't have the coping strategy or capacity to empty their backpacks. So those are the people in our society who wake up daily and scan the environment looking for an opportunity to be offended.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. That's and, you know, and we have choices. We don't have to have an opinion about everything. We don't. Those two buckets. Two buckets. So it's important to know the things that you can control versus the things that are beyond your control.
Right. And what about your social media? We can get that on your website.
Yes, you can. Thank you. I'm on Instagram. Twitter.
It used to be called Twitter. It used to be called, formerly known as.
That's right. And also Facebook.
All right. Awesome. Well, I really hope you'll come back. I think you're fabulous. It's such a great talk. Everybody, keep coming back to Health Power 5 days a week. Follow me on formerly known as Twitter, at Lisa Davis PH, also on Instagram and TikTok. Everybody, have a great day. And keep coming back.
Well, that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. And we would appreciate it if you could please rate and review and leave a comment, because the more you engage with our podcast, the more you will find it and help other people find it wherever they listen to their podcast. So be sure to follow us. I'm at Andrea Donsky and at Naturally Savvy. And Lisa?
At Lisa Davis MPH.
Thank you so much. And please share this episode, because the more you share shows you care. We'll see you next time.